Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
Oh my God.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
You just did like a whole sweaty ball thing. Hi, and welcome back to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin. It's such a hack joke in the podcasting world, by the way.
I know. And we're your hosts.
We are.
You lucky dogs. We're back for yet another wonderful episode.
We are. So, Jamie, this week, very exciting. October 11th is National Coming Out Day.
It is.
Oh, God.
I didn't actually know that.
You didn't know that? No. It was on my list, Jamie. You didn't see that on the Google Doc?
I didn't open that Google Doc.
Oh. Mm. How do I do the lists?
Well, so, do you have any funny coming out stories?
She's from Canada now. I didn't have an easy time coming out. Like, I didn't come out until I was like early 20s.
Mm, me too.
I was under some fallacy I was going to date men there for like far too long a time. And I made up a whole thing because I had a girlfriend. Like, I didn't come out until after I already had a girlfriend, and I was like lying about her name, and I made up a whole thing, and then I had to like slow fade out her name and switch it back. I just did not handle coming out well.
Wow.
I'm going to tell, you know what? For Patreon, I'm going to tell that extended story,
that
coming out
fun.
Story on
that
Patreon.
That's a good idea.
And you have a coming out story.
I will give you it in a nutshell.
A family coming out story.
Well, I just came out on Saturday to somebody because we have this doorman down the street who we're very friendly with. And I was talking to him, and in a nutshell, he told me I have to be careful with my daughter playing basketball because a lot of those athletes, those girl athletes, turn out gay. So you have to be careful. Awesome. And so I had that moment, like, what do I do? Do I say so? And I did. I said, oh, that's okay because I'm gay. So. And then it was awkward, and now it's, I don't walk by that doorman anymore because now it's like this awkward thing. I don't know.
And anyway, that story, you're going to hear the full story also on
that's
Patreon.
That's on Patreon. So
if you
check
if
it
you
out.
Support us, go over to it.
So yeah, we come out all the time as gay parents.
/ ovaries talk. We do. That's one of the things. You're forced to come out as
all
a family.
The time. So.
I'm glad it's not a big deal now. Now I just drop in like a softball reference really early on and then just move through it.
I just say, did I mention I have a wife? I have a wife.
I always go, my lady friend. Because I think that's funny. Also, technically, she's not my wife.
No, she's not.
Poor Mary.
I know.
I come out bad in most of the stories, Jamie. Most I really do time. Think.
I think we both do. It's okay.
I think as much as we could yammer on here and drive off listeners.
We have to get to our guests.
We do.
Because they're fantastic.
Seth Rudetsky is here.
With his husband, Jay.
The
people might not have heard that because you whispered it. And they might have bad headphones.
And his husband James Wesley are here.
You guys, I'm nerding out over here because musical theater.
I met Seth through my day job and I told Jamie about it and she like lost her shit. And then I started stalking him the way I do. Like, yeah. You be on my podcast? What's you? And then when we were texting, I was like, oh, I have him.
Yeah. So for those of you guys who don't know Seth Rudetsky,
by the way, what's wrong with you?
He has two radio shows on Sirius XM on Broadway and Seth Speaks. And it's all about Broadway.
He was like a writer EP on Rosie, the Rosie O'Donnell show. He's like all over Broadway. Yeah. Yeah. He's phenomenal and talented.
And so is his husband, James Wesley, also in the musical theater world, also an amazing singer. Yes. And they happen to be dads.
Parents.
Yeah. So that's why they're on our podcast.
Not just because we're fanning.
It has nothing to do with musical theater. And everybody out there is like, why does she always talk about musical theater? We're going to get to the story.
All right. We're going to bring him in so Jamie can fangirl. All right. Here we go.
Bring him in. Hello.
Oh my God.
Hi, Seth and James.
Hi. Why are you acting like you're walking into the room and seeing me for the first time?
Yes.
We've been chatting for the last 20 minutes.
Can you not wreck the mystique?
Sorry.
We talk about bringing you in the room.
It's like a whole thing. We'll do that in the intro.
You just, now our listeners are... Totally.
It's like on reality shows when people walk into a house and people say hello. I'm like, you're both Mike. It's not a surprise. Like you had to have known she was about to walk in.
2 hours already.
All right. So as you can tell, this episode was probably, if we finish a story, it'll be amazing.
Exactly.
I don't think
but we are going to try to start where we always do, which is tell us the elevator pitch about your family.
About our family.
Or your relationship. You can really answer it any way you
we're
want.
We're loose.
Basically, my name is Seth. I was with my boyfriend for a long period of time. And then broke up with him thinking I was going to have like a year to like, you know, be dating nonstop. Yeah, yeah, basically like be a hooah, as my mother calls it. From the Bronx. She's a hooah. Anyway, two syllables. Point is, I wound up going to a singles game night. I'm obsessed with games. I was like, you know, getting everybody's phone number. And I invited James on. I said I work on the Rosie O'Donnell cruise, the Our Family Vacations. And he said, oh, I have a daughter. And I was like, oh my God, you guys should totally come and get your discount. Just sort of like one of the many people I was talking to randomly. And then, like, he wrote me, like, a 3-paragraph email. And I was like, oh, my God, he's so polite. And I was like, oh, we should go on a date. And then by the third date, I was like, oh, we're getting married. I literally knew we were getting married. And I planned a whole year of whorishness. But
much,
I just knew.
How much whoring time did you get? Like, a month?
We met in December, 2006?
That's right.
December 2006. We got married October 15th, 2012.
Yeah. Well, I had lived in New York from 98 until 2003 and I moved to Texas because moved back to Texas. That's where I'm from. And in 2001, to go back a little bit, I was raising my then 6-month-old niece. And my sister wasn't able to take care of her for a variety of reasons. And that are not that dissimilar to what many people go through in families that raise their nieces or their granddaughters or grandsons or whatever.
I mean, it wasn't really that you were raising, you're like, oh, I'll help out until you get yourself together.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
I'm just saying so people know, it wasn't like you were taking over. You're like, let me just help.
That's right. And then 9/11 happened and things really changed. And I had to, my sister had kind of gotten it together by then and because my sister's daughter. And then 9/11 happened. We had to move out of the sublet that we were in. And it just, New York wasn't a safe place, so they moved. My sister and daughter moved to Texas, and I stayed in New York with my then boyfriend. It wasn't Seth, and
I know it's not a secret.
And I was depressed because of 9/11, but I was also, I now know through a lot of therapy, depressed because I wasn't with Julie anymore, my niece, because she had been with me for 9 months. I mean, she took her crawl for the first time to me, took her first steps to me, all of that, and ended up moving back to Texas, as Seth said. And Julie ended up living with me and my then boyfriend on weekends, and then she began living full-time with us when she was 3 years, 2 months old.
But your sister and mother were still sort of vaguely raising her.
Yeah, they were there, but more almost part-time.
Almost like an 80s dad who shows up sometimes.
Well, I was...
Oh, they were, yeah.
That was also my childhood.
There you go. But I always had this dream of moving back to New York because I'm a singer and actor, and I did a lot of theater in the Dallas area, which was fantastic. They have a great theater scene there, but I still wanted to go back to New York. And
there's a lot of movies down there too.
Yeah, I never got into that. I had my Broadway dream, you know.
Yeah, me too. I get it. I see that. You. I feel.
And yet, I didn't know who in the hell Seth was.
You were in that camp.
I didn't know.
That was an important part of the story to tell.
You were not impressed.
But
Jamie knew who you were.
But I ended up adopting Julie when she was 5 years old.
Well, basically, legally. Let me just say, your boyfriend said, because I think it's interesting, your boyfriend was like, someone has to be the controlling parent. It was too many people being sort of in charge,
handing
but not in charge.
And,
Well, not even handing her off. It just, no one was able to make the final decision. It was sort of his sister, sort of his mother, and sort of him. And his boyfriend was like, it's bad for the kid to not have a
final
he was,
say. And Donald was my boyfriend, a new boyfriend at the time. we'd met doing a show together. You're not supposed to ever date your co-star, but I did.
Especially, no.
I did.
Actors.
But Donald was great because he did give me that advice. He saw the back and forth of Julie living with me, seeing her mom on weekends, and I was Uncle James. And, you know, she was getting to an age as she got to age 5 that it was like, there can't be that instability.
Yeah.
And so I basically told my sister, I said, look, either I need to adopt her or you're, as heartbreaking as it will be to me for not to live with me anymore, you'll have to be raising her. Because of course, you know, Julie's father had already moved on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And were you bluffing, by the way? Would you really have been like, peace out?
No, I was not bluffing at all. I was not, because I knew for my own psychological well-being, I had to draw that line.
Yeah.
It was the first time in my life.
It probably wasn't good for you either.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. And by the way, we're talking about Texas when the Republicans had taken over the state legislature.
Right. Yeah, right.
Okay? So we're talking about
Post Ann Richards.
It was definitely post Ann Richards. It was post George W. Bush, who was the by then president. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking about what's his name? Who's, we don't even hear from him anymore. So Rick Perry was governor, and you know.
Well, please tell the story. Just I'm sorry to keep interrupting. No. When you
this
went
is
to
the
senator.
Longest elevator.
No, but I think it's important about why
this is a cruise around the world.
This is how it goes. Every
okay,
time
good. I love it.
But there this is why it was necessary for you to adopt. Talk about when you visited that senator, that Dick.
Yeah. So
we're allowed to say Dick, right?
Yeah.
He was a Dick.
You can say whatever.
So when the Republicans took over the state assembly in Texas, they decided, of course, that they should have a law that if you're gay, that you shouldn't adopt or be a foster parent. And so we went. We made an appointment with my mom's state senator, me.
His mom is a big liberal and a loud mouth.
And me and Julie, who was only a couple years old at the time, and my then partner. And we all went and lobbied. You know, there was like a lot of people lobbying that were in the LGBTQ community there who were parents or uncles, aunts, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we had the appointment, very calm. I was able to keep my cool. And I just asked the guy point blank.
With Julie sitting in your lap.
Yeah. Yes,
for visual effect.
And I just said, so you're saying that if something, God forbid, happens to my mom, because my mom at that point was Julie's legal guardian. Mm-hmm. I said, you're telling me that if something, God forbid, happens to my mom, that Julie, my niece, should go live with a complete stranger other than me just because I'm gay.
Right.
Yeah. And he said, yes. And now you need to leave my office or I'm going to call security.
Stop.
And holy I kept my crap. Cool, kept my cool, walked out of the office into the outer office, and I started screaming, all of you work for I didn't curse, all of you work for a bigot, you know, and I just like was, and it was later written up in like the local paper that there was, you know, someone,
a belligerent gay man,
a gay uncle who was like escorted out of the office.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you can find it online.
Claim to fame
right
there.
Did you ever consider, because of that, like lying and adopting as in pretending you were a straight dude?
No, I didn't want to do that. And so when it came time, I purposely found a lawyer who was gay friendly. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about 2003, 2004
totally
in Texas.
Time.
It is, which is 1961.
Yeah, right.
We're
right,
talking still. About like, right. you know, really, there I weren't mean, that many gay
across
parents.
The country, yeah. completely different time. But Texas, yes. even.
And if you're a man.
Oh, forget about it.
If you're a right. man, real, you know.
It, I'm just got very about that. Forget about it. I don't know where that came from.
<It's> true.
What happened there? Sorry.
So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, being, yeah. forget about the gay part for a second, yeah. going to the playground and being the
a
only
man. Even if you had been a single
there.
Man adopted, they would
point.
Have been like, what are you trying to do with right. this baby?
Exactly. Right. And so I got a gay-friendly lawyer who worked really hard to get a gay-friendly judge.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, but I was never, there was no way I was going yeah. to go in the closet. I didn't come out until my mid-20s. I was like, there's no way. I worked yeah. too hard, mm-hmm. too hard to go back.
Also, you have a little girl now looking up to you, and she knows you're gay. So how can you go in the closet at that point? Just for modeling pride
honesty.
To your daughter. Right, right yeah. yeah.
Or honesty, sure.
Honesty, yeah, that too.
But still, yeah.
Absolutely. And, yeah. and so the adoption happened. We were doing a show together, actually, Children of Eden, Stephen Schwartz's mm-hmm. Children of Eden. Mm-hmm. I played Noah and Adam, and Julie was a squirrel.
I love
and,
that.
And we did the adoption during the run of the show. And so it was really, I'm going to get emotional, but we did it was like December 30th, I think, 2005.
Yeah.
And we did the little curtain call, you know, whatever, I don't know how many shows we did, maybe 40. And I carried her, and aww. Someone made the announcement. I think it was God. The guy who played God.
The character said, of God.
Right? Not the voice yeah. of God, but actual God.
God.
Yeah, it's God.
Said that, you know, that James and Julie officially, legally became, you know, father and daughter today.
Oh, lost in the world.
Yeah, wilderness. Yeah.
There
and then
go.
I met him. That, then
you
I
guys
met
want
him.
Me to sing that?
She was
I will.
Six. She just turned six when I met her. So she was yeah. five when she was adopted, moved to New York that September, and then I met them that December.
I met Julie because she cut my hair.
Aww. Yeah, Julie now, by the way, now she actually just turned 19 yeah. 2 days ago. But yeah, she cut your hair. She's going to beauty school now.
Yeah, and of course, since we have this podcast, I was like asking her about her dad's the whole time and what's it been like and what's
no.
Oh, but no, she's
being
listen, I wouldn't bring this up if it was bad, obviously. Well, maybe
you
I would. Maybe I would.
Child Protective
no, she
Services.
Speaks about you guys with so much love. Really.
That's very sweet. Actually, a lot of her teachers and everyone yeah. that the adults in her life always say she really talks about you guys really lovingly. Actually, that is sweet.
She and does, and she's proud of you guys. It's really sweet. I cried. Aww. I had so I shed a tear. I didn't let her see though, but
that's sweet.
Yeah.
She saw,
and she does good hair. So
well, okay. So yeah. So you get together. You didn't want kids. He's got a kid. How right. did that all go?
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah, therapy. I mean, like,
right out of the gate.
It was the biggest adjustment for me was just not being in charge of my time anymore. It was weird. It was like right. I never. My life was at night, and to be like, oh, we can't leave the house.
Oh.
I remember even once, yeah. like, I thought I had, like, a canker sore. I wanted, like, you know, whatever.
Canker?
I want, yeah, like, yeah, just to
Ambersole
put on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, I can't like,
go?
Run out, because he wasn't home. I was like, I can't run to the drugstore for, like, 10 minutes. Like, mm-hmm. I
because you went from, like, 0 to 60.
Yeah, and
hour.
By the way, it's a little kid. It's not even, like, yeah. a 10-year-old. Yeah. Like,
that's
she was just 5.
Usually
was,
what goes through my
six,
mind.
Yeah.
She was
She'd
six.
Just turned
right,
six.
She just turned 6.
That's yeah. where I'm at right now. My daughter's almost 6. That's usually what goes through my mind right after bedtime, and I realize I don't have wine in the house.
Jamie, Drizzly delivers right to your door. Drizzly, please get
We're
in touch with us about
sponsorships. We're not allowed to let delivery people into our building. We have to meet
Why?
Them at the door.
Oh, so you can't even leave the apartment
You just
for that.
Run. It's booze. It's
you
important.
Can have her pick up the wine, I guess, and watch her on the monitor.
My daughter?
Yeah.
I could
so
do
that'll
that.
Solve both problems.
I could do that.
Anyway, so the biggest adjustment was literally not being able to go out. And I like not being able to like have friends over to watch movies because it could wake her up. And just all this sort of like, oh my, like something I never, ever dealt with.
And yet, I would say easily the first month of us being together, Seth was walking her to school.
Wow.
Whenever. I mean, we
After
weren't together.
After the first month, you're saying.
Yeah. 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 Within the first month. Yeah. I mean, don't you think?
Yeah. Which is like weird because I'm not a morning person, but
not a morning
I just
person.
Adjusted. Me either. I just became, I mean, I just kind of had to become one. And yeah. And I.
It's not
I
like we were together every night, but I would say for the most part, Julie and I were in that apartment on the Upper East Side for maybe, what, 6-7 months after I met you. And we rarely spent the night over at your place because Julie had her own mm-hmm. bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And I would say maybe a couple of times a week you would spend the night. And mm-hmm. you were always walking with us to school. Sometimes you'd give me a break and just the two of you would walk to
and
school.
And she would go willingly with, willingly.
Well, yeah. And then once, and then maybe like a year and a half later when we moved in, like I was always, I was in charge of taking her to school every morning. So that did totally change. Yeah, but I actually enjoyed it. Especially,
they really
enjoyed
it. It was a bonding time for them, I think.
And it was also,
they're the happiest at that
in the morning,
point in the day. That's when my daughter is the most talkative and she's actually happy and not really, well, not because
she
complains.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true because I think she's a tired ass in the morning. Yeah. I don't know if that's really true. I think being picked up from school is also kind of fun.
The Mr. Softy time is the time when my kids are the happiest.
Oh, after school?
Mr. Softy, whenever that is.
Oh, okay.
If it's, you know.
If it's preschool.
Sometimes it's 9 in the morning.
Well, what's horrible is that, actually, she wasn't the happiest because she was actually, really, now that I remember, it was really hard to get her to school. And we used to do this thing where we'd say, oh, if you go to school on time 4 days a week, we'll get you a donut on Fridays.
Yeah. That's right.
Which, of course, is horrifically passive aggressive, because then we found out that the reason she had severe eczema every single day is because she was allergic to gluten, but we didn't know it. So we were actually slowly poisoning her. With our amazing go to school on time, and then you'll get what you're allergic to at the end of the week.
I do the donut bribe.
Yeah, we suck.
So,
yeah.
It's basically.
I mean, as long as you know it, and that's all that matters.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you're walking her to school. Yeah. You guys are, you're going to get married. It's a given. Like, you know this.
Well, this was also, by the way, before marriage equality. So I knew we were going to go to, quote unquote, going to get married, but I don't know what that meant because it wasn't even a possibility. I just knew we'd be together.
Yeah. And I think what sealed the deal was, as Seth said, on that first. By the way, going back to that game night, that's when I learned that he was the entertainment director. Was that your quote unquote title, Seth, with the Rosie Cruise?
No, I don't even know what. But I did a lot of the Rosie. I did a lot of the performances.
The music director.
Yeah, music director.
Music director. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And when I learned that, it was like the I loved the Rosie O'Donnell show for like the first year before I moved to New York from, I had lived in LA for 9 years. And then I didn't watch it anymore. Little did I know that Seth was a writer on it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd later find out. And little did I know that he wrote the opening number to the Tony Awards in 1998, which was the Tony Awards I watched and thought, oh my gosh, so that's funny. Me. The month before I moved to New York had been written by Seth that features, you know,
Pat of the Pone and Betty Buckley and Jennifer Holliday.
Oh.
What do you mean that's me?
I mean, in other words, what really inspired me of like, oh my, I'd already decided to move to New York was that, and then watching that Tony Awards, knowing like the beginning of June, knowing I was going to move to New York in 3 weeks. And that opening number to the Tony Awards in 1998 was so amazing.
It was amazing.
But little did I know that Seth had written it. And so he, in a way, had inspired me before I'd even moved to New York, which was like 8 years before we had even met.
But what were you saying sealed the deal?
Anyway, so what sealed the deal was that there was a Rosie Cruise.
Oh, I see.
And that was coming up in mid-February 2007, which was about 6-7 weeks after we met, or after, because our first date was the following week. And we got two connecting cabins.
Uh-huh.
You know,
one that was for me and Julie, one that was for Seth.
Uh-huh.
And let's just say, from there on, it was...
Julie had her own bedroom.
Yeah. How did you know?
Because he was in his horror period.
But it's when I really... I got to know... Here's yes, all that's true. But secondly, it was when I really fell in love with Seth. I mean, we had already said, I think, I love you at that point. But it was the time that we
like
really...
You guys are like lesbians, how quick this happened.
We really spent the time together.
Really, we felt so connected.
Yeah, we really felt connected. And we really spent a lot of time together on that trip. And I got to meet some of his closest friends.
And my mom.
And his mom. And it was just like everything just kind of made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was so lovely to Julie. And, you know, the Rosie Cruises really were kind of amazing.
Yeah. Judy Gold talked about the Rosie Cruises.
Yeah, we did them all together. That's a change.
I said I missed that.
They were great.
I know,
too. But that's what changed Julie, because when Julie was first with James, he was Uncle James, and he wouldn't let her call him anything else until it was official adoption. He didn't want to get his hopes up. So then when she was finally adopted, she called you Poppy.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? And she always called him Poppy when I knew him. And then it wasn't until she went on the Rosie Cruise and she saw other kids with gay parents that she, I guess, realized she was allowed, I guess, to call you Daddy.
Yeah, I mean, you remember that.
That's
more
when it
than
changed.
I
always remember Poppy because she had that accent, Poppy. Right. And then after the Rosie Cruise, it became Daddy. She never called you Poppy after that. And I think it's because she saw other kids. She'd never seen other kids.
It,
She modeled it. Yeah.
It's so important.
What did she call you?
Guess what? She calls him Daddy. What do you think she calls me?
Seth?
Daddy.
Daddy.
Oh, which is fun.
Yeah.
Daddy. What? No, Daddy.
Yeah.
Literally. We go, can you say Daddy Seth? Can you say Daddy? Can't you say Poppy? No, Daddy. Literally. And then once in a while, Seth. But it's usually just always Daddy and not you, Daddy.
That's my daughter does that. We started out Mommy and Mama. And now it's Mom, she's five.
Oh, just one
mom,
syllable.
What do you want? No, not you, other mom. It's not fun. It's not fun.
No.
Because it's said with attitude too. Like, oh, I'm supposed to know. Yeah.
Well, it's better than, I guess, older daddy. Now that I think about it. Which he always likes to make me know that
daddy.
I'm a 2.5 years older than him, or as he always likes to say, a quarter of a decade. So I'm glad.
I mean,
yeah, it's rude.
We've talked a lot about like bio parent versus non-bio parent, mm-hmm. and you're in a unique situation that you're both non-bio parents. Like, how did that?
But he's bio uncle.
But
he's
bio uncle.
Are related, and you've raised her since.
Yeah, I'm just curious how any of that shook out for either of you, or like, did you just fall in naturally?
I don't know, because I never had a bio kid. I mean, I'm sure no matter what, there would have been, if I had a bio kid, there are other elements that you connect with because you're like, oh my God, like that's so me, or that looks like me. Although Julie always says people say that she looks like both of us, which is interesting. But I've never had a bio kid, so I don't know. But I know the way I felt raising her, but I can't say if I felt, if I don't know. I don't know.
But you don't have any, you don't have any issues around it. Like, you don't have feelings like, oh, if she was my bio kid, it would be different.
No, it's because someone else would be like, oh, why did I get involved with this in the first place? You know, every parent feels that way. Like, why did I have sex that one night? Whatever it is. So yeah, of course I feel that. But I think that's just normal. I guess this is what was hard for me, is that Julie definitely was a hard kid. She was a difficult, difficult child. And I guess it was always this thing of like, I felt guilty because I'm like, well, this is really difficult and not that much fun a lot of the time.
Right.
And then it was sort of like, why can't you just love being a parent? I'm like, but this is a harder child than most, you know? And then like, it was just, it was
a slippery slope.
Yeah, it was really,
you get in there. It was hard. Yeah.
Well, I think that with bio parents, that's the issue that they don't have to deal with, is now people, kids that are adopted, like there's a whole realization in with pediatricians and with therapists that when, if you're adopted, there's trauma involved.
Yes.
Because there is a quote unquote, there has been a quote unquote rejection of the child by their biological parents. It does not matter at all that it was the best thing that could have happened, that their life would have been quote unquote worse if they had stayed with the biological parents. But the reality is, for all good intentions, it's traumatic.
Mm-hmm. James did not accept that at first. And not in a bad way.
I mean, there wasn't like, I had no idea. I thought what I think most adoptive parents thought 10 years ago, which is, you're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so.
And she's got this amazing life. How could she miss this other life, which would be such a nightmare? Because at one point, a teacher said to James, oh, I think she misses her mom. And he was like, he saw it as homophobic, which I understand. But the reality is, just because she has gay parents doesn't mean that she doesn't miss her mom.
Yeah, and I don't know if that, I still don't know if that was necessarily it. Because the reality is, my mom, her grandmother raised Julie much more than my sister did. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, I'm sure Julie missed my mom greatly at that time.
But it could be a mom figure. It doesn't have to be her as a person.
Well, but I don't even know if she missed it. But I don't want to get into that, like, a female figure. But I would say she missed the other relatives.
No, I mean the idea of a mom.
Or just the relatives that raised her besides James, because he moved her to New York.
She had a unique situation too, because she knew them before.
Exactly.
She was with them. It's not like your adopted child that comes as a newborn and never knew the birth parents.
Right.
So it's unique.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's even more, because I think even when you take them as a newborn, it still is psychologically traumatizing, because
when
they
learn,
they know
that truth.
Right. But you're right, this is even more clear cut.
It's a whole, they're a very deep layer to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's different.
She definitely had trauma, and she definitely acted out. And it was like, it was hard, because I didn't want to, you know, it's hard for me to be like, that child's a nightmare, you know, like, but, you know, but it was a reality, because I had nieces, and I was like, my nieces don't act like this. Mm-hmm. And then it was always like, am I like a bad person for feeling this way? But.
And then I think for me, I felt guilty of like, oh, did I do the right thing? Should she have been raised by her biological mom?
Because she's struggling. You're struggling.
Right. Did I do something wrong? You know, it becomes this guilt ball that just keeps rolling and getting bigger and bigger, because you're living it, so you can't see the big picture.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And now we can. And now by the way,
sort of can.
The added trauma.
I was
going to
say, are you open about this now? You all talk about this?
Yes. But I mean, also thinking back, the added trauma is she had really bad eczema, like we were saying with the gluten allergy, but really bad, and asthma, and she was dyslexic. Mm. So she wasn't able to read, and you know, was not acknowledging it. So she's going through this daily trauma in school of feeling incredibly stupid.
Isolated.
You know? So, yeah. Yes, so, and lying all the time. But that's what dyslexics do, is they lie.
Yeah.
So there was all that. So the
acting
there's
no way to know what was what.
Right, why she was acting out.
Exactly.
Was it a combination? Was it more one the other? But she was still acting out, and James definitely didn't, I feel, want to admit that she was acting out more than other kids. And then I felt like a crazy person going like, don't you understand? Like, this tantrum's not normal. I don't know what my point was, but I was just frustrated because I was like, it's weird that she keeps having tantrums.
Well, I have the hero complex, you know, that I can right. be the one who saves everyone and everything.
Well, and so. You're a parent, we're parents. So we, you know, it's hard to admit. But also we see it happening and it's heartbreaking, yeah. and but you want to fix it and you think you can fix it because you're the parent and, you know, it's this constant, what was the word I'm looking for? Cycle. Like a cycle.
Cycle. Thank you. Of cycle. Guilt. And, but, you know, I don't think we ever really fully acted out, either of us, you know, in terms of like, you know, saying you're a nightmare child. Like, you know, we'd have fights and stuff, but I think what-
I think sometimes I said a nightmare child, but-
Whatever. But I mean, like, she said the same thing to us. Right. But I think the best thing about me and James is that I don't think we ever both were at the same level of devastation or fury. Like, always one person was like, I've had it. Like, no, yeah, giving it
sort
back.
Of always yeah, weirdly sort of. Has worked
tag
out
team.
That way.
Some tag yeah.
Just but yeah. naturally, not with any intention well, of like, okay, you know, you take over. It. It was really just kind of naturally.
You're like, no,
it was
just okay yesterday. Right now,
we were on a conference
this.
Call and he was having like a fit. And I was like, it's so not a big deal.
Right.
Our couples counselor said that that's a natural thing in couples that happens because there's a sense that there's not room for you both to be freaking
it's
out.
A survival.
Yeah. Interesting. Like, there's just not the emotional space. And, you know, because otherwise the ship goes down.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe it's a good couple.
I mean, I believe sense, that, so. But I just know that.
It doesn't always happen.
I mean, sometimes we've both been off the rails, but usually one of us can always
that's
handle
why I
it.
Said 95%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have to also say that with this non-bio versus bio thing yeah. and like the guilt you have over the kid who's not relating to you and feeling like, oh my gosh, this one's a nightmare child. And then I feel guilty that I'm saying that.
Right.
Robin always makes me feel better because she had both of their kids. I had one, my wife had one. Mm. So we're both non-bio plus bio parent. Mm-hmm. And I have guilt. I have the same kind of guilt that you do, Seth, over like sometimes
the one
how
that
I,
she didn't have.
The one right. that I didn't have. And she can be difficult at times. But Robin always makes me feel better because she has a similar situation.
But I had them both.
She had them both.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all
I was literally on the subway this morning, like crouching down in his face, going like this. I don't understand why you do this. Yeah. I was like, you're just being mean to her. And I don't get it. Yeah. And my neck is kind of yeah. like, yeah. I was just like, and there was yeah. like, and I saw this lady like, yeah. like just Blaring. Trying not to watch at me, but watching.
I mean, that's, God. I think the
and
biggest.
And I was whisper yelling.
I think the biggest lesson for all parents is that you could be a good parent, but your kid really is your kid. So all you can mm-hmm. do is kind of be the best while your yes. kid is your kid. I think there's this myth that if you parent children the right way, they will turn out a certain
right.
way.
Right.
It's,
and
that's, not true.
It's not true.
All you can do is really not act out yourself. That's right. the only thing you can do.
And that's
not
really hard sometimes.
Oh boy, is that hard.
Oh yeah.
I try to.
I acted out on the street the other day.
And then you have to go, you don't understand. She's normally yeah. a nightmare. Like, you know, like, right. like wait, I sound worse?
Mind your business.
No, I know. Mind your business. None of your business. Oh right. man. Right. Yeah, I lashed out hard. It was bad.
It's hard. I definitely have guilt about, yeah. you know, being frustrated with her and things I've said. I definitely, you know, I always remember those moments. And then I always go like, well, then don't say anymore because you know you're always going to remember the horrible thing you said. So control yourself. Right. And that is really what I'm working
but
on.
But we're human beings. Yeah. So, you know, you're going to have a breakdown. It just matters.
Know.
Do you clean it up? Like, mm-hmm. you know,
that
I
would
I clean
say
it up
we always do.
Yeah, I would say we always clean it up.
We're really good at that.
I always apologize. If I got out of line, I make a point of apologizing
Absolutely.
To her so that she sees it modeled.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I've taught James to wake her up too because he'll be like, oh, she's sleeping already. And I was like, she should not go to sleep with these right. bad feelings. So right. we'll wake her up and then we'll tell her that we're sorry for what we did, whatever it is. But I always think it's bad to have a whole night of being devastated over your parents.
Oh, God. I know. There's so much guilt. Oh, my God.
And yeah. did she have any issues with the gay thing with the two dads?
No. No, it was a complete non-issue.
That's great.
She's yeah. like an advocate. Well, when I was talking with her, she's like all about
she
gay
actually is
and gay
she's
parents.
Very much an advocate.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. yeah.
That's why, you know, so funny. I just saw someone today, hashtag gay dads, and it actually irritated me. I was like, what is your point? I mean, like, I don't know. I can understand why it's a point for people that think gays shouldn't be fathers, but I always find it, I don't know. I find it irritating when people do it for some reason. I don't know why
well,
it triggers
if they're an
me.
Instagram couple, then that's
yeah.
one thing.
I feel it's like, look, we're really handsome guys that have
yeah.
children.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, shut up. Like, and I just always feel there's an assumption behind it. Like, we do our daughter's hair. Like, it's right. It's like, I just call it, we're just fathers. Like, right. I don't think I'm any different because I'm a gay father. Like, I'm not, don't know anything about fashion. I just think I'm a father. And it really makes me angry when there's this difference between gay fathers and regular fathers. It completely enrages me.
I think with Julie, to go back to the, about who she is and how she feels, I purposely, when she came and lived with me at the time, she was three years, 3 months old.
In Dallas.
Yeah, in Dallas. And she went, enrolled her in a Montessori school, which, by the way, I did not have money for. My mom helped, you know, I had a job. I had a good paying job. But it's like, that shit's expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so why did you enroll her in that instead of public school?
Because, or just any other daycare, because Montessori schools tend to be on the more liberal side.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, and it was great because, I mean, I was doing shows at night.
Right.
And so it's like, I would drop her off. I'd pick her up. I had a friend, you know, come and watch her. And when she could be in the show, like she was, Children of Eden, she was. So she grew up with theater right. people. Mm-hmm. So, and then she went to a liberal preschool, basically mm-hmm. in kindergarten. To, you know, not that she would have been anti-gay otherwise, but I kind of set it up, especially because we were in Texas, and you know what? I didn't like, no, I just
you gotta
wanted
put her
to
around the
side.
Right people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that it's interesting. I'm sure it would have been a lot harder for her in Texas.
It would have been.
There would have been
had
a lot.
Stayed.
Of,
yeah,
exactly.
I mean, there was a couple of little moments in elementary school where, remember one parent.
No, remind me.
One girl in PS 87, her parents like made comments about Julie having gay dads. I mean,
I do vaguely remember that.
Yes, I mean,
right.
It happened once in a blue moon in the liberal Upper West Side, but it would have happened all that. She would have had to really stand her ground in Texas. Thank God that you moved her up here. Right. That's the horrible burden to have. And I never felt you ever had that
And the
burden.
Gay parents that I knew, because of the director of Wild Party, actually, he and his partner, yeah, in Dallas, had a child, and they made sure they enrolled their child in a private school. Ugh. I don't know how it is now, because there are a lot more, you know, gay and lesbian parents. But back then, it's like in the early mid-2000s, you had to kind of be careful where you enrolled your kid.
Yeah.
I feel like that's still the case.
Is. Oh, it is.
The leaps and bounds we've come since 2002 to here.
Oh, well, just the whole marriage equality. I'm saying right. like when we got together, I never thought we'd get married.
Right.
But I still see things like, actually, well, the big, I mean, I'll drop the bomb now, we'll talk about it later, but I'm actually legally adopting Julie now.
I was just, my next question was, have you done second parent adoption?
No, because I'm just the stepfather. And then we sort of, you know, we're so bad about scheduling things. And finally, we're like, let's just get it over with. But I'll talk more about it, but what I wanted to bring up is that one of the lawyers that sent me a form to fill out, it was like, mother, father. And I was like,
are you kidding me?
I was like, in this day
and
age,
New York State,
it made me furious.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So it is still like, it is still a big deal to people.
And we actually, it probably would have already been done, and we literally owe an email or a phone call to our lawyer because we're Julie and Seth, because this is really about Julie and Seth at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what I mean? This is their decision. Of course, I support it, but it's really between the two of them.
She's an adult now. She's 19.
Right, because now she's 19.
I didn't know you could do it at 19.
And that's the other thing.
That's what we're going to talk about.
We're going to talk about that.
There's a lot of...
But regarding Julie and adoption, is that they're like wanting a home inspection. Mm-hmm. They're going to, like all these different things. And like...
They wanted mother's permission. It's like, her mother is no longer legally involved.
Yeah, she's not
She's not on the birth certificate.
Yeah, and Julie was talking about being an advocate. She was furious.
I'm surprised they're not doing it as a second parent adoption since you already have parental rights.
That's...
And then the mother wouldn't have anything to do with it.
I keep arguing with the lawyer about it. I keep saying, this seems completely anti-gay. Why are they acting like it's some weird... I still keep wanting to put my foot down about it.
Well,
with second parent adoption, they do still require the home
inspection.
Right.
Yeah,
they
do. The home study is part of adoption, period.
I know, it's crazy.
We all had to do it. We all had to do it, too.
Okay, well, there you go. So then maybe that'll make you feel better.
I had the babies. Yeah. Mary had to do second parent adoption to be their parent, to get parental rights. And we had to do a home study. We each had to fill out the 25 years of where you lived.
Oh, well, then that's
all part of it.
That actually makes me feel better
because I kept thinking it was completely homophobic.
Yeah. No.
We actually had a social worker come in who does home visits, come in and talk to us. And she made us feel a lot better about these home visits. She said it's really just a formality.
Is it a formality? That's my question.
Yeah, I
still think it's not acknowledging gay relationships.
But listen, though, this is in New York.
Needs to be moved.
They're saying it's still homophobic, but it's not just our county.
Do you want to put off?
No, I won't put it off anymore.
I think now we got to do it.
Yeah, now.
Guess what we're doing tomorrow?
We have a lady for you.
We haven't done it all.
We have a person for you.
Okay, good. We'll get, although we're not in New York City, we live upstate. Thank you.
It's not that far.
Okay, so about the older adoption, and this is what we really wanted to talk about. So we got involved with this organization. At one point, we were thinking of fostering. And then we found out that this horrific woman named Gladys Carrion, who ran ACS,
American Administration for Children's Services,
cut funding to the organization that was helping us foster and to this other organization, you got to believe.
Helping gays foster? Oh, no, the organization that was helping you guys.
And we're like, why are they cutting funding? And we looked into, we found out that you got to believe this other organization that had almost all their funding cut is to help foster kids. So let me go back for a second. Foster children, basically, when they hit a certain age, usually 18, they age out of the system, meaning that peace out, like literally peace out, like no money,
good luck. Find a house.
Nothing.
Yeah,
really?
50% of them become what? Homeless or in prison. Because when you're in college, how many times do you call your parents to be like, either lend me money or just to be like, should I take this course or not?
Right.
Yeah.
Can I come home on Thanksgiving? They have nothing. So you got to believes that nobody ages out and their goal is to help older foster kids find families, whether to adopt or not, but just to find families. Because going back even further, once a foster kid hits 8 years old, they're considered quote unquote special needs because they're so difficult to find families. Because most people think, oh my God, an 8 year old without parents, what a nightmare.
I don't want them.
Yeah, they must have like been horrible. But what the real answer is that the courts try as hard as they can to keep parents with their children. And once
they're
finally
biological,
and once it's finally like, oh my God, these biological parents cannot raise these children, nor can any other relative, they finally go, okay, the child is liberated, whatever that word is, when you're
emancipated. Right.
So it takes years. So it's not like this child is a problem. It's more the courts have waited and waited and waited.
Right.
So then the kid gets older, but adoptive parents are like, we want a puppy. We want a little baby. We can form. We don't want anybody 8 years old. So the kids go from foster home to foster home, age out, nothing. So you got to believe helps these kids find families. And also, by the way, officially get adopted. Some don't, but we know kids literally 32 years old adopted by people. And it sounds like, what the hell does a 32-year-old? But it really does mean something.
Everybody needs a family.
Everybody wants to belong.
I never thought about that.
So Julie's always been like, I'm her stepfather. I'm here because I'm, with James. And of course, I love her, but I'm here because of James. And it will definitely, I think, affect her to be like, no, I'm literally legally adopting you. Like, you are my daughter. Instead of like, you're my daughter because I'm dating James or whatever. Now I'm married to James.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the kids, I mean, especially because, going back to horrific Gladys Carrion, who, by the way, was forced out of her job.
We begged Mary de Blasio. We wrote letters. We said, you have to get rid of this horrible woman.
We got Adina Menzel, all these people to sign a petition. Change.org. Petition, didn't get anyone. We said, okay, well, we've got to do what we can, which is what we normally do. Well, now we normally do it. That was our first one, really.
That was the first one.
Where we got our friends together and we put on a show.
A giant concert on Broadway, and we raised all this money to keep
them
funded.
And it was the first foster care benefit ever to be done on Broadway. We literally could not get the janitor from the mayor's office to come.
Wow.
We literally could not get one person or ACS.
Nobody would come support it.
They did not want to come.
No, and we had literally Tina Fey. We had like the top talent. Nobody would show up. And we're raising money for just an organization that helps foster kids.
Nonprofit company. I mean, a nonprofit organization.
What is that about?
And you got to believe is the only organization in New York City that exclusively works with helping older kids find forever homes.
You guys hear that? Go put some money in You Gotta Believe.
Yeah, YouGottaBelieve.org. So we started this. We started doing these benefits for You Gotta Believe every single year.
Every year. And so we've just said, what year was that, Seth? 14?
That's the one you just did?
No, that was for immigration.
You Gotta Believe when it's coming out.
No, we got it. You got to raise people money, and we do it the best with doing benefits. But You Gotta Believe is a great organization, and they're the only ones that help older foster kids find families.
But we've met a lot of people.
By the way, Gladys Carrion was finally fired after numerous children died. So finally, it took that long for them to go, oh, turns out she isn't qualified.
And the guy who's in charge now
is amazing. We love him,
and he really is listening. The different foster care organizations in New York feel like they're being heard, and we love him. He's fantastic. But to go back to the whole gay lesbian thing, is a lot of the kids,
listen to this, is
are adopted from the LGBTQ community that are basically, I've met kids, and so has Seth, that were adopted, when they become a teenager, and then they're rejected,
quote unquote,
again.
Given back.
We have heard that, even though legally adopted,
you can't give back your child.
The whole thing when I adopted Julie is that I have to swear before the court, I'm about to cry, that I cannot give her back. This is forever.
Yeah.
And yet these kids, someone did the same thing, and yet they broke that promise that they made to a court.
And these kids go into foster care.
And then they go into foster care again. the number of kids that we've met who are gay and lesbian that have been in 18, 20 foster care homes who are rejected because they were too old and because they were gay is like mind numbing. Yeah.
And that's why you got to believe, says it's not necessarily to find parents to adopt, because a lot of these kids don't want to be adopted, quote unquote, because they've been rejected so many times. Yeah,
they're
like
burned.
They just don't. Yeah. They don't want to ever say they want to be adopted. So they just say they want to find a family. And sometimes they'll get adopted. Sometimes they won't.
But I said that when they want to get their hopes up for anything.
Yes, exactly. Oh,
but we love the organization, and, yes, and you know you got to believe it's in New York. And I know you have listeners all over. There are places. If you are living, I'm going to tell your listeners now. Yeah. If you're listening anywhere in the country, you got to believe is so amazing. If you don't know who in your community you can go to you got to believe,
and they'll
and say I'm living in Boulder Springs or Colorado Springs, Colorado, yeah. and I need a place, and they will tell
they will find you.
So you were going to foster, and then you didn't foster.
Basically, right when we were going to foster is when teenagehood happened, and
that, but really we had done the home study, we had done everything for a foster kid, and what Seth said, Gladys Carrion had pulled the funding, and we all of a sudden the organization, they were like, oh, the city of New York, they'll be calling you. By the way, they never called us. We had all these parents who had gone through training and had been gone through
the
25 years of past year, like where you lived in criminal. We had done all of that, and then they just dropped us and other families.
So that is what happened.
And then teenagehood happened. And other projects happened.
We were focusing all of our energy on dealing with Julie at that point.
What year was that? That was 2015.
Yeah, exactly. Which is when she turned 15.
She was 14,
I can tell you all the things that happened.
No, you don't need to say all that. We don't need, because Julie is doing much, much better now.
Much, much better, but it was basically a full-time job. It was much worse than teenagehood. It was really, really terrible.
Well, and I'll out her on this just because it's not anything new. Vaping is horrific. And she is one of millions of teenagers who have gotten hooked thanks to the Juul.
Their sweet flavors and
Exactly, dulce de leche.
I'd love for us to be part of a civil action lawsuit and be part of it.
She got completely hooked and addicted,
and many of her
would
friends.
Do anything for it, which includes, by the way, really? I mean, trying to get the money for it, which was not in the most safest of ways.
Vaping.
She's in a much better place now.
Yeah,
so
no, she's a million times better.
Well,
but those
you can get addicted to anything.
Yeah,
you know,
and her friends were all. I mean, it's a complete epidemic.
It's an epidemic in every single high school,
right?
That's in this country.
I do not want my kids to go to high school.
That's scary.
High school is really bad, and also, of course, social media. And we're the first generation of parents to really deal with social media. And we didn't know about hidden websites. I mean,
we literally got ridiculed.
Yeah.
By
other parents
in eighth grade, when Julie was in eighth grade, like at a PTA meeting, because we had her passwords.
They're like, God, you guys are so overprotective.
Oh,
my kids know. They know that from now until forever, until they're out of the house, I have their passwords. Period.
Yes. The problem is there are so many trickster style ways that they go around. So you do have their passwords, but there's other stuff you don't know about.
No, my wife works in a high school, and all these children have these secret private
accounts. And they have their fake ones.
All kinds.
The only thing I will say,
and they just come up with new ways.
Exactly.
The one thing I'll say, which may be true, and a study was done, is that doing all these inappropriate nude shots, even though it can get you kicked out of school, blah, 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 it may actually prevent, though, having sex too early, because you're getting sort of their sexuality out that way instead of maybe. So in one sense, it kind of pays off, because you don't have to maybe worry as much about pregnancy. But in other ways, it's called a screenshot, and then it's spread around
the school.
And it lasts forever.
Everywhere. So when they apply for college, for a job.
Oh,
it's terrific.
Yeah.
And we're the first generation to do it, because Snapchat didn't exist before Julie was like 12 years old.
Well, at least now there's organizations. There's some lady that came into my kid's school that's like, that's her whole job. She comes in and talks to parents about what you need to be up on. She writes all these blog articles. So it's like, there's help now to like what you need to be watching.
Because now,
and now there's all those
catching up a little bit.
And there's all the stuff with, you know, like even Verizon has protections on your phone, or like you can have the thing on your modem so that you can see what they're surfing and you can see their texts. And she said something I thought was really cool, is she said that doing that sometimes helps your kids. It gives them an out. So she said,
her son
will say, don't send me that picture because my mom's here. And she said, it gives them a peer pressure.
Right.
Out.
That's right.
My mom
great.
And I had a secret code that I would use whenever I would call. So like if a friend was trying to pressure me to sleep over, because we were going to do something, I was supposed to call my mom. And when she said hello, I would say, mom, is something wrong with your voice? Before I ask.
That is
and
brilliant.
Then she would know to say no. However, my mother never remembered the code. Oh,
that is a Sally Rudetsky, my mother special.
So I'd be like, Mom, is there something wrong with your voice?
You can sleep over if you want.
I don't think so. I think the connection is fine. No, Mom, is there something wrong with your voice? No, I think, let me check the receiver. No.
The next thing you know, Mom. Heroin.
Right.
You were forced.
And then that's what happened.
Like, I don't want exactly.
So that's my funny. There's my mom popping in again.
What a headache.
But yeah, that's an old school story. But and then my five-year-old asks for a phone every day.
My kids are just like, when do you think I'll get that? I'm like, not for a really long time. Yeah. Like, no.
It's bad. It's bad scary. News, man. It's been the cause of like major fights. Social media and phones and iPads and iPods.
There's 1 year left of teenagehood. She just turned 19.
Yeah.
She still live with you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
When does that end? When are you like out?
Oh God, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know, she's done with high school. She's in cosmetology school. I think she's going to be done with that around December. And I think she's now trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to do with my life?
Mm-hmm. She's going to start working right away. She's going to go to acting school.
Because of the
dyslexia,
regular college isn't for her, but we've been saying a BFA because then she's a really great actress.
That's
she's a great
what
artist.
But see, I want her to have that.
The college experience.
Yeah. I loved
I did
Oberlin.
Too.
It was a small town and we just played games. Like, it was just so great.
Are there any conservatories that are outside of New York or LA that are 2 years? That's what I want to know.
Oh, I have to be. You know what you need? There's like all kinds of people who are those college specialists.
Yeah, I don't feel like spending $30,000 effing dollars to find a damn. Well, it's always some up. We were going to do one for high school. It's like, I'm a high school specialist. We're like, I'm not paying you to do Google.
Oh, those jobs, seriously, those jobs, man, they make bank. There's a lady in Park Slope, Brooklyn, who just like, she makes bank, like private conference calls, but she tours all the schools and she's up on everything.
Just find
she teaches you how to work the system.
You can find a 2-year program.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's
London. Oh, she does. But I want small. I don't want her to be in a city. I want that small Oberlin. I want to recreate my college experience.
She wants to go. She wants to work in a salon beginning like when she's done.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel like it will be kind of revealed to her.
Right.
And as long as she is working, then look, we still enjoy each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, I don't think we have to, she has to get kicked out.
We didn't yesterday.
Well, those days happen. Those days happen.
We mainly do.
I would say overall, but isn't that true of any relationship?
I was just going to say, can't that be said of like you guys too sometimes? Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure we're annoying. Yeah. Oh, you mean to
each other?
Yeah. Oh, no. He's annoying a lot.
Yeah. So it's like, does any long-term relationship?
Exactly.
You're scared because I'm in the beginning stages. My kids are so little. You guys are really scaring me. This is an ongoing job.
It's really teenagehood that you have to figure out. It's social media. I think that that's the
social media. I don't envy you because at least we didn't have it the entire time.
It's so different, right?
You know, it's like giving them that independence and giving them that, you know, secrecy that every teenager wants, but like not letting it go too far. And it's so hard to figure out. I'm really happy it's over.
I'll give you a little trick for later on because this is not a plug for Deco because I do not know anyone who works for the company.
What's Deco?
Deco is like basically for Wi-Fi in the house.
Uh-huh.
And you hook up your devices to it and you know which device is being hooked up. And that was one of our things we didn't know when Julie would like use one, like an old iPhone of Seth's or something. And we didn't know she was hooked up. And so now I know if something is hooked up to the internet, it'll say, Julie's iPhone or whatever.
Or Seth's old iPhone, which supposedly is broken.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not working magically.
So, you know, there are ways to kind of figure out.
We gotta get rid of all
our
old
iPhones,
too.
And that stuff's even more now. It's like you can see their searches. You can see everything.
Yeah. And then I feel bad because a part of it's like, I want the kids to have privacy, but it's like,
I don't know how much. I didn't have that much privacy.
Yeah.
Well, this was absolutely fantastic.
I had like 3 more hours of information.
I know, right?
We'll come back.
We need a part two, is what this means.
We'll come back with Julie.
Yes.
I told Julie she should come when she was doing my hair.
I'm going to fully script what she's going to say, but still, it'd be fun to hear her say my words.
Well, and I think Julie would be great because she herself is a pioneer because there weren't, you know, on that Rosie Cruise. That Rosie Cruise, that was like, I don't know, maybe 20% of kids were being raised by gay parents at that time. I mean, if you think about it, in the early, mid-2000s, there weren't
gay
that
dads
many older,
even fewer.
Right,
older
yeah.
kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's
but it's so funny because it really was a non-issue to me. And I think to her.
Right.
I think in other cities
bubble.
It was a much bigger issue.
Yeah,
but I feel like I don't know. I just never felt like it was a big deal, her having two dads. Hmm. Except for, like, you know, Mother's Day, you go like, oh, I feel bad. Like, it's weird that... But I don't know.
But she also had a mother that...
Yeah, her mother's alive and stuff. It's just she wasn't around, let's say, in town.
Right.
But anyway, you know, I'd love to talk about Julie's perspective because I really don't know if she ever felt any weirdness about having two dads.
It's fun to get...
It's all going
to
happen at the kid's perspective. This is all happening. We're going to hear it. Jamie, are you okay?
I am geeking out. We just interviewed Seth Rudetsky and his husband.
And the best part, what people don't know, is we just walked them to the door and they spontaneously did dancing.
A chorus line.
Yeah. And while they were doing it, they were doing things like, bam, chicka,
you have to in order to get the turns. You go, boom, boom, ah, chicka. You make noises when you dance because it helps you stay. It helps the breath. Yeah. Anyway.
Meanwhile, she's like this.
I had too much coffee today, but we did it like three times. He remembers it better than me too, which is. Oh, anyway, I'm geeking.
They were amazing. Mm-hmm. I like love them as a couple. Yeah. I love their story. That was really wonderful.
Yeah.
And also just like fucking Seth Rudetsky on our show.
Fucking, I mean, and James. I mean,
amazing people.
I love them.
You want more of Seth, you can get him. He's a host of two shows on Sirius.
XM.
Yeah.
On Broadway, it's called On Broadway. And also Seth Speaks.
Yeah.
So check him out, Sirius XM.
But he also he travels, he does like live shows. They have so much going on. So
they're busy boys.
Check him out.
Yeah, they're awesome. And it was so fun to dance with him.
That was just chock full of information. And we are going to hold him too. We're going to get them on the fucking live show with their daughter, Julie.
Yeah, like,
are. That's happening.
Let's do that.
And so
and Julie's lovely. It's going to be great.
Okay. All right, folks. As we always say, let's keep this conversation going.
Check us on the social.
On the social media. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk, and you get all kinds of extra cool footage and content and parenting advice and us being jackasses.
Which so that's we do happening. A lot.
We're jackasses.
You can get us at ovariestalk on Twitter.
Ovaries_talk on Instagram.
And If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook. Also, we have a private Facebook group.
Community,
if you will. If These Ovaries Could Talk. We've gotten some new joiners
week. And people are chatting and asking cool questions.
People have a lot to say. It's really nice. So join. Become a part of the community.
And as we leave you, we have a special exit.
Special exit. Shall we do it?
Yeah. Here we go.
Eggs. Ovaries out.
Eggs, ovaries out.
Eggs, ovaries out.
I'm not a spontaneous singer.
Eggs, ovaries out.
I love it, James.
Eggs, ovaries out.
Yeah.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries out.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.